Hello, listeners. This is Jenny Brentis. I am in studio this week with Bette Marson. She is filling in for Connor Orr on this week's episode of the Weekside Podcast.
Hello, everybody.
We are fresh off an exciting Monday Night Football game. It's not always that Monday Night Football is the best matchup, especially in November. It's hard to peg these things, but we got a gem.
It was really great. We had 49ers and Seahawks last night. 49ers going into it were undefeated. But, you know, if you stuck around for the end of the game last night, it went into overtime, and Seahawks pulled off the win. So we have no more undefeated teams in the NFL. And to me, this whole game, it kind of felt like, I guess the whole season, I did not think that the 49ers were going to go undefeated. I don't know about you, Jenny, but I was, you know, especially for the 49ers' sake, I felt like there was just no shame in losing this game. Like, this was a good game to lose. Like, if you're going to lose a game, you're going to lose it to the Seahawks.
So. And it seemed like at certain points in time, in overtime, especially after the Niners pick off Russell Wilson, you think the Niners are going to win. They line up for a field goal. Obviously, there's a miss. And so it's. I'm glad that it didn't end up in a tie, because I think that would have not done a service to how great the game was. But here's my question. Which do you think is the most more dangerous team right now? I would have to say the Seahawks, even though the Niners have the better record.
I would have to agree with you. And even though this week we had the 49ers ranked over the Seahawks in our power rankings, which you should check out on the MMQB website, the Seahawks are looking really powerful. I mean, Russell Wilson had it all going for him last night. And even though they had those two three and outs in overtime, or I guess each team had a three and out in overtime last night, it was just, I think that Russell Wilson is really looking like the potential MVP candidate that he is. And, you know, it's all kind of coming together for them. So I really think that the NFC West is going to be one of the divisions to watch going down the stretch.
And not the way we thought. We thought probably the Rams coming off the Super Bowl appearance. But yeah, I mean, you know, Russell Wilson, Lamar Jackson, in my book, neck and neck at this point in the MVP race. Obviously, a lot can change. And then you have the Seahawks defense that really came alive, especially to Jadeveon Clowney. Returned a fumble for a touchdown, forced another fumble, one sack, five QB hits, 12 pressures. Just like a renaissance of a performance. Exactly what you thought they were trading for when they made the move right before the season started. This presence on defense that could potentially put them over the top. And even though Connor Orr is not here right now, another shout to his preseason pick of the Seahawks winning the Super Bowl.
He was the only one who had it.
Oracle.
I cannot wait to shout it from the rooftops when, you know, we do have the Seahawks in the Super Bowl. Like, he is going to, you know, so excited for him.
Well, we'll move to our news topics right after this. All right, Bette, news topic number one. Cowboys coach Jason Garrett cited a miscommunication for Tavon Austin's punt return before the Cowboys' last gasp final drive in their 28-24 loss to the Vikings. Austin fair caught the ball instead of taking off for what looked like it could have been a sizable return. We did a poor job as a staff making sure he understood that, Garrett said Monday. Hopefully we'll learn from that experience. If this was, in fact, a coaching gaffe, is there more fodder for Jerry Jones to move on from Garrett this offseason?
I really think so. And you know what? At this point, Jason Garrett has been there for so long. And it's like, and he is, they're always, everyone in Dallas, everyone knows that he, you know, is the Jones, he's grown by the Jones. And like, the Jones has all brought them in there to be that head coach. And now it's like, you know, where do you go from here? Like, he's been the, Jason Garrett has been the guy who has lasted through so many different phases with the players there. And then now they're almost like, I don't know, do you think they're looking for like an opportunity to get rid of him? And at this point, I think they must be.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like to this point, right, Jerry Jones has made reasons to keep Garrett. And I think this year it feels like after 9 years, it's at more of a tipping point than it's ever been before. There were questionable late game management. Some of the play calls were questionable late in the game, which is not coming from Garrett, but his staff. And then this, you know, this Austin play. Now, sometimes coaches cover for players, right? You know, maybe he's saying this publicly when in fact he had been given different instructions, but it really did seem like Austin thought he had to fair catch it given the time on the clock. And I think a fair catch is not a bad option in that situation, except for the fact that there did seem to be a lot of grass in front of him, and so he could have advanced farther down the field, making the last chance Hail Mary drives or opportunities a little closer.
And a coach really has to take responsibility for his players at some point, too. And that's what I'm really saying. It's, you know, missing. You know, Garrett is doing that here, but at the same time, it's like, you know, okay, like, where do you take that from here? Like, is Garrett going to use that, you know, at, like, you know, I don't know. What's going to be next for him? So it's just, I don't know.
And a lot depends on, you know, the division race, too. That mm-hmm. makes the decision-making at the end of the season either easier or harder. And at this point, they're neck and neck with the Eagles, 5-4. The NFC is going to be a slog as usual. And so I think that, of course, how the rest of the season goes. But to this point, the Cowboys have been a frustrating team to watch, yo-yoing up and down every week.
That whole division is just such a disaster.
It always is.
And it's like, and I feel like that became especially clear after last night's game, the NFC West, that was like just such a good game there. And it's like, okay, it's pretty clear that there's 2 8-win teams in that division. Like those two, like probably two of those teams, one's going to win the division, one's going to win the wild card. And so it's like, okay, there's very little chance the wild card is going to come out of the NFC East at this point.
Absolutely. All right. Do you want to read news topic number two, Bet?
Coming up, news topic number two. Giants head coach Pat Shurmur said after the embarrassing loss to the Jets that he won't stop calling offensive plays and that there will be no changes to his staff, including offensive coordinator Mike Shula and defensive coordinator James Betcher. Is the status quo a good idea here?
Seems like in East Rutherford, there's just a lot of angst right now. John Mara not saying anything after the game was very telling, because Mara is always willing to engage with the media, and, you know, but he's also, you know, as we mentioned on the podcast on Sunday, his face says what he means. So, you know, reading into his facial expressions in this case, I think there's definitely something there. He clearly gets heated in games. We all saw the chair flip a couple years back. That's now a GIF. And he's admitted at past times, you know, that he's been, you know, there was a time with Leighton Coughlin's tenure when he said he wanted to fire everybody. So I think the reality for Pat Shurmur is changes are going to be coming, I think, in East Rutherford on some level, whether or not he makes them or not. And so I think he's in this juncture where it seems like giving up offensive play calling would be a change to make. It's on this Connor Orr list of what a coach does when he's trying to save his job. At some point, you give up play calling. And there aren't really a lot of other choices, right? Because you can't just say, this is acceptable, we're not changing anything. And that, to me, is the most obvious change to make at this point in the season.
Yeah. I love the Connor Orr list of things that coaches do when they feel like their season is getting out of hand. And giving up play calling is phase three. phase one is to insist you're going to keep grinding. And that kind of seems like what's happening here.
Yeah, I think like, they are still stuck in phase one. Yes.
It's like they're starting to go in on it. And it's like, okay, like he's making sure everything's staying status quo. But I don't, like, they do need to make some changes. I don't know. And it's so, anyway, that's where, you know, the next thing based on the Connor Orr list, which I have right here in front of me, the next phase is going to say that his next phase is when he's going to tell reporters that he's decided to spend more time in offensive or defensive meetings, whatever the opposite of your expertise is.
Whatever the opposite.
So,
yeah. So
looking forward to that.
Well, keep an eye out for that. But yeah, I mean, it's the Giants have just been kind of, they got the last hire wrong. You know, it's possible they got this hire wrong. Really, I think the biggest evaluation probably for Shurmur over the remainder of the season is the development of Jones. And if they end the season and John Mara thinks that Shurmur has done a good job of, you know, addressing the fumble problems and helping Jones take a step forward, then I think it's possible they bring him back. But the problem is right now, it just feels like they're a team that kind of just, it's just meh. And there's not a ton of like urgency or answers, really. I mean, I think public perception does matter a lot. And I think the things he mentioned in his post-game press conference, that there were things that were encouraging, but he didn't want to share them. And I think in a situation like that, there's probably some value in sharing those things.
Mm-hmm. And at this point, like, this team is just, is one of the, like, they were going into the season looking for, you know, at least some sort of upward movement. And it seems like there has been none of that upward movement. And, like, I realize you're under a rookie quarterback, and, like, you can't have huge expectations in a rookie quarterback. But at the same time, like, if nothing is happening, if you're just kind of simmering at the same, like, low level, then, you know, what's the point? It's like, you got to do a little bit. So,
and speaking of teams that simmer at a low level, this next topic is for Bet. The Bucks cut 2016 first round draft pick Vernon Hargreaves Tuesday morning after he was benched in Sunday's win against the Cardinals for what in Bruce Arians' view was a lack of hustle. There is now just one member of the 2016 draft class remaining on the Bucks roster, cornerback Ryan Smith. Tampa native Bet has some thoughts on this.
Yeah, so Vernon Hargreaves was one of the guys. He was benched on Sunday against the Cardinals for what head coach Bruce Arians called a lack of hustle. There was a 55-yard catch and run on that Andy Isabella had that, you know, he apparently did not hustle enough. So, you know, fine, whatever, a good reason to bench him. And, you know, now that he's been cut, he was drafted as part of the 2016 draft class. He was their first round draft pick, the number 11 pick in that draft. And there is one player left on the team from that draft class. And yeah, like you said, it was Ryan Smith. And he mostly plays special teams. And the only other player from that draft class who is still in the NFL is tight end Dan Vitale, who plays for the Packers. And it just really makes you wonder, like, are the Bucks really, like, are they already pausing, like taking a step back and thinking about next season? I mean, it's like they've only won 3 games this year. They're 3-6. They're not going to pass the Panthers or the Saints in the division. So are they, and, you know, Hargreaves, the thing about Hargreaves is that the Buccaneers had already picked up his fifth year option on his rookie contract back in April. So they cut him ahead of that. And it's, I don't know, it's one of those situations where the Bucks have consistently struggled at cornerback, and you thought that this was going to be a guy to come in and anchor, to be an anchor for that unit, but, you know, he struggled with injuries. He was out most all of last season with an injury. He struggled with injuries previously, and now he's no longer there. Like, I guess the Bucks are going to be starting fresh from that. So, I don't know. It's definitely one of those, like, tough situations where it's like, okay, you know what, I guess completely coming clean from that whole draft class. So
yeah, and when they hired Arians, the question was, oh, you keep Jason Light, you know, that you do the weird pair the GM that's in place with the new head coach rather than starting fresh on both. And, you know, now you're in a situation where this Hargreaves cut just highlights the drafting issues they've had. And of course, you know, Jameis Winston is not the answer, and, you know, at this point, you know, they'll move on from him. So I think you're just a lot of examples of why rosters get eroded over time is, you know, classes exactly like this one. So I think that's another consideration too, is like, if you have Arians making this decision, kind of the move of sending a message that we were saying that the Giants really haven't done. There hasn't been any kind of change there. But, you know, where do you go after this season? And do you potentially make a GM change now a year after making a head coach change? So a lot of questions in Tampa Bay.
There's on that same note, this was the same draft 2016 when Jason Light drafted up to draft Roberto Aguayo, the kicker who now famously is no longer in the NFL. He was the best kicker in college. He was so excited to get him, and then he just, like, famously flamed out of the NFL. And, you know, so all around, top to bottom, that entire draft class is very cringeworthy. But, yeah, I don't know. I think for the Buccaneers, the biggest question is Jameis Winston. And, you know, I said that, you know, back at the beginning of the season, you know, all season we're going to think about, you know, Winston and Mariota. They're on the fifth year of their rookie contracts. Like, they were supposed to be franchise quarterbacks. Neither of them are panning out. And so now the Bucks and the Titans are joining that group of teams that now need quarterbacks out of the draft this year. And that group is expanding exponentially. Seemingly, you know, now we need, obviously the Dolphins will need a quarterback, but now the Bengals seemingly need a quarterback. And it's just, you know, put the Bucks and the Titans in there too. So.
All right. News topic number 4. Do you want to take this one, Bet?
Yep. Upcoming this week is a Super Bowl 52 rematch between the Patriots and the Eagles on Sunday night. Who holds the psychological advantage here?
So we were talking about this in the newsroom earlier, and I was like, let me look up Belichick's record following a bye week. Obviously, you know, we're talking about the psychological advantage, you know, given the Super Bowl a couple of years ago. But I was thinking, okay, the Patriots are also coming out of bye, and Belichick is 14-5 following a bye with the Patriots. And then Mitch Goldich, our resident Eagles fan, says, yeah, you know, but there was also that time when there was a bye after the AFC Championship game, and then they went to the Super Bowl and they lost to the Eagles. And I was like, all right, so just really bringing it back to this Super Bowl game. But it is hard to think. I mean, Brady had some comments on WEEI this week where he was basically saying that there was like still scar tissue from that game. And while he did think it helped motivate the team to come back and win the Super Bowl this past year, you know, painful memories. And I just think coming off of a loss before the bye week, coming into this game, it's their first chance to avenge it. It's hard not to think the Patriots have the psychological advantage.
Yeah. I'll oppose you on that one. I don't know. I think it's the Eagles. The Patriots coming out of this, they always perform really well in the regular season. But I don't know. The Eagles are going to surprise you. And Jenny, you picked the Eagles as your team to watch. I feel like we've talked, or you, not me, obviously I'm not on this podcast, but I feel like you guys have talked about this on your podcast, and they're either going to be the team to watch. And so I think that it's going to be interesting, because if the Eagles beat them here, then we're going to go into that hole of like, oh, the Patriots have lost two games in a row. Where do we go from here? And then that's going to start its own news cycle. And then it's just going to go in a deep spiral from there. So
it's the news cycle that we're used to in like September, right?
Because,
you know, we see the Patriots all start 2-2, and then this is it. The decline is here. But yes, so maybe we'll have that in November, you know, in your view. But yes, I mean, this is a critical game for both teams. Not as critical as Super Bowl 52, obviously. But Patriots want to rebound from the loss, their first loss of the season to the Ravens, and the Eagles are now in position to, you know, the division is wide open, right? So big matchup this weekend.
Yeah, they've got the Eagles have that, like we were talking about before, the NFC East, it's up for grabs. They have that. They're motivated by that. They're motivated to win the division. There's only probably going to be one team from this division to make the playoffs, so you know, they've got to take this one and take the momentum from there. So, I don't know. It'll be a good game, hopefully. I guess that's all we can really ask for at this point.
Right. All right. News topic number 5. Last week's slate of games featured a ton of upsets. Connor Orr led the charge in our picks, MMQB picks, by getting 7 right. Most of us were miserable, including myself. In that spirit, let's pick one upset for this week. What do you got, Bet?
You know, I'm going to pick the Cardinals over the 49ers. It's another divisional. The 49ers are coming off a divisional loss to the Seahawks that we talked about earlier on top of this podcast. And the Cardinals, you know what? They're a little tricky sometimes. The 49ers have that great defense. They've got the Nick Bosa. But I think that Kyler Murray, you know, he might be able to out-trick them. And he might be able to, you know, they might be able to figure out the 49ers. And, you know, it's one of those things where I think it's probably going to be a pretty big shootout. I think the Cardinals are going to find a rhythm, and they're going to be able to get the points up on the 49 against the 49ers. And then, again, we're going to have the 49ers. I'm just predicting teams to go into holes this week, apparently. Because now we're going to have the 49ers having lost 2 straight games. I'm just predicting all the storylines for next week. You know, that's the business I'm in. But, yeah, I think the Cardinals are going to be a team to watch for this week. They're one of 3 games at 4:00 this Sunday. So, you know, I think we also have the Patriots and the Eagles in that 4:00 slate. So a lot of people will be watching that game, but Cardinals, you know what? You got to watch out for them.
I like that. It's an interesting pick. It's similar reasoning. Just the idea of having a big game and coming down from that big game. Obviously, mm-hmm. the Niners lost, but, you know, it's this back and forth. It's Monday night. It's a short week. Mm-hmm. Mine is the Broncos at the Vikings. And, you know, Vikings coming off this big win in Dallas Sunday night. And I think it's just like the emotional letdown a lot of times you see is, you know, especially when you have a game like the Cowboys game where it's fought until the end. It's tightly contested. And, you know, the Broncos have been a little sneaky at times this season. At times they've looked bad. At other times they've been pretty good. So I could see the Vikings just kind of having a womp-womp game after their big conference win last weekend.
I hear you, Jenny. I like that pick. And the Vikings have been so up and down this season as well. And some, like, they're a pretty hard team to figure out. I mean, they're good. They're among the group of good teams in the NFL, or in the NFC, in the NFL this year. Like, I wouldn't be surprised to see them make the playoffs. You know, Dalvin Cook is having a really good season. People have been propping up Christian McCaffrey, but Dalvin Cook, he's top running back in the league right now. But at the same time, if the running game doesn't get going, and if Kirk, you know, if that offense kind of stalls, then it's a big opportunity for the Broncos. So
yeah, and sometimes you put so much into one game, right? Mm-hmm. Cousins vanquishing this, can't win in prime time, you know, these kinds of games he always, you know, lets down. And so he vanquishes that, and you can just see next week kind of being that letdown game.
Yeah, and being under the lights is harsh for Cousins, so.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so we don't have Connor this week, so we have no Oracle. We have a Regis consensus. I am a Penn State alum, Bet, and Penn State had a tough loss this past weekend. And nothing was tougher than seeing them have fourth and goal and the play call being the dreaded goal line fade. So if we're talking about a consensus, that's something that everyone can get behind. Why are goal line fades a thing?
They shouldn't be. Like, it's always so confusing and it's so frustrating and I don't understand. Like, whenever you see it happening, you're just like, you know that a disaster is about to follow it. It's just, oh my goodness. So
I would like to throw a flag on a goal line fade. You know, just throw the yellow flag, get it out of the game. And we'll just also give a plug because apparently it's mock draft season. Apparently mm-hmm. this week on the MMQB, we will be having our first mock draft. So those people following college football who are wondering if it's Burrow or Herbert or Tua in the top spots will be able to see where we have it.
First thing tomorrow morning, check up on the website. By the time you're listening to this, it should hopefully be live. And you know what? I think it's going to be out there for everyone to enjoy. And if you like it, let us know. So, you know, maybe we'll give you more of them. It'll be great.
All right. That ends this week's episode of The Weak Side. Thanks so much for joining us this week, Bet. The MMQB Weak Side podcast is me and Bet Marston. We are produced by Shelby Royston. SI's executive producer of podcasts is Scott Brody. Ben Eagle is director of editorial projects and product. Mark Moravik is emeritus executive director of the MMQB. Keep up with our entire lineup of podcasts 5 days a week by subscribing to the MMQB NFL podcast for free on Apple Podcasts. And while you're there, please do us a favor and leave us a rating and review. It really does help other people find the show, which is also available on Spotify, Radio.com, Stitcher, SI.com, and wherever else you listen to podcasts.